It's approaching 2 weeks since a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, shot an unarmed black teenager, and anger is still brewing in this mostly black community. From the excessive use of force by the police to journalists being targeted, the plot thickens. The previous night, police killed a knife-wielding black man who yelled, "Kill me now," as he rushed at them with a knife during an apparent convenience store robbery. The top U.S. law enforcement official, Eric Holder, is going to be visiting the Missouri town, prompting questions as to why the U.S. president himself is not willing to travel there. In this edition of The Debate, we'll ultimately ask the question, why is race still under question in a country like the United States, and why there's still a debate on how officers treat minorities, especially African Americans or blacks?
Hands up, don't shoot. This is the slogan chanted by peaceful protesters in the crisis-hit American city of Ferguson in the state of Missouri. Racial tensions have been on the rise in the aftermath of the police killing of an unarmed African-American teenager who was shot several times by a white officer. Successive nights of protests have continued despite a heavy-handed police crackdown. Scores of people have been arrested so far. There are now fears of more violent confrontations between police and the demonstrators protesting the fatal police shooting of yet another black man in St. Louis City, just a few miles away from Ferguson. Police say his death was justifiable, claiming the man was wielding a knife.
As officers arrived, the suspect turned towards the officers and started to walk towards them, clutching his waistband. He then pulled out a knife in what we described as an overhand grip.
Meanwhile, Michael Brown's family wants the police officer who shot their son six times charged with murder.
I'm being fair. Arresting this man and making him accountable for his actions.
No justice!
No peace!
U.S. officials have already been under fire for their inaction towards the rising racial tensions. Protesters say President Barack Obama, who's an African-American himself, has failed to take action and put an end to the rampant racial injustice in the country. Some observers believe the widespread racial discrimination in the U.S. suggests that America is no democracy for ethnic minorities, including people of color.
In this society, and oftentimes what we had with the promise of a post-racial society was just complete nonsense.
According to a 2012 census in the U.S., African Americans make up 14.2% of the population, but 28.1% of this group is living in poverty. Unemployment among them runs at double the rate that white workers experience. African Americans also represent nearly 40% of the population of state prisons. The ongoing racial unrest in the U.S. state of Missouri is seen as yet another piece of evidence that the dream for a more free America has yet to come true.
Because I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Let's introduce our guest for this edition of The Debate. First, we're going to talk to Press TV correspondent Caleb Maupin, who is in Ferguson. And our guest for this edition then will join us, president of Jacksonville branch of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Opio Soconi joins us from Jacksonville, Florida. And we have senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, Lawrence Korb, who joins us from Washington. I welcome our guests, but first, our correspondent, Caleb Maupin, who joins us from Ferguson. Caleb, you're there. Tell us what's going on. At this point, we're looking at almost 2 weeks of protests. The news indicates that these protests have somewhat died down. Is that accurate?
Well, last night we were at the spot on which we are standing right now, and there were roughly 2,000 people here. And they were marching, and they were here until very late at night. There were roughly 2,000 people here. Now, while CNN and other news agencies are reporting things about agitators, we didn't see any agitators. What we saw were 2,000 young people from this community who were very, very angry at the police and very, very angry and are in the streets. That's what we saw here. And while it may not be as big of a crowd as it was nights before, it was still a very big crowd. And there still seems to be a lot of anger here at the police department and about what happened to Michael Brown.
Very well. We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much, Caleb Maupin, our correspondent there I'm sure we'll be in touch with you, but let's turn our attention to our guest. And first, let's start with you, Lawrence Korb, looking at almost 2 weeks now at what's going on there in Missouri. Has the length of the protest surprised you in the way that not only it started, but also the duration of time? And why do you think they have gone on for this length of time at this point?
Well, I think what happened in the beginning, the Ferguson Police Department was simply overwhelmed in trying to deal with the situation. And I think since they've turned, after about a week, and they turned the investigation over to the Highway Authority with Captain Johnson, who's an African American, that has moved us somewhat in the right direction. Then, of course, the Attorney General Holder, who's on his way out there, in fact, he might be there even as we speak, who happens to be an African American, the highest legal officer in the United States, is out there, and the FBI is there. You have a grand jury investigating, and since in our system a person is presumed innocent till they're proven, you know, guilty, we have this judicial process, and it takes time. I know a lot of folks would like it to go more quickly, as did I, but, you know, Officer Wilson is going to, you're going to have a grand jury and to decide whether there's enough evidence to actually put him on trial.
Well, let's see here. Opia Saccone, and Lawrence Korb, I don't mean any offense by what I'm about to ask Opia Saccone, but Opia Saccone, we have our guest there, Lawrence Korb, who talks about Eric Holder, who says he's also African American. And that topic seems to be injected into his statements there. Isn't that, in a sense, where the root of the problem is? We're looking at news that says African Americans, for example, in terms of the jury here, or in terms of Eric Holder, or in terms of just race being described that way. There should be no difference when it comes to race or color when you look at the bigger picture, shouldn't it?
You're right. And
I agree.
In this country, race is considered.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Opia Saccone.
In this country, race is. Sure. Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. Race is considered one of the original sins. We have a country that has said one thing when it comes to human rights and civil rights, but has done something totally different. When you have a president of the United States that's black, you have the attorney general that's black, and now they brought in the leading person on the ground, and Officer Johnson, that's black. Somehow that is supposed to take away the whole issue of this young black male being shot a couple times in the head, mind you. And you have not only blacks that are out there protesting, but you have whites that are protesting as well. You have whites that are really upset that you have this type of militarization in this country against citizens. A lot of those weapons coming from the wars in Afghanistan. So when it's all said and done, it's not just a black issue here. And again, you have a country that says one thing but is doing another thing when it comes to race and justice in this country.
Well, there's been lots of studies done, Lawrence Korb, and some details were indicated in that report. One of them I'd like to indicate here, that a black person is killed by police every 36 hours nationally. And this particular report said that it comes at a time when the extrajudicial killings of blacks is on the increase, and I'm using their words here, nationally, raising concerns that this is a systemic trend. Now, the problem with this that I'm telling you is that this report was done back in 2012, and here we are 2014 looking at what has happened. Why do you think this has gone on for the length of time that it has?
Well, there's no doubt about the fact that we have an awful lot of problems that we have to deal with in terms of fully integrating all of the different groups into the country, into the mainstream. I think if you get into the problems with African Americans, as your report in the beginning said, in terms of the poverty rate, it's higher than the rest of society. It's getting better, but it's not where it should be. If you go back, for example, when the Civil Rights Act was passed in 1965, and you look at the percentage of African Americans who graduated from high school, it was like 20%. Now it's 70%. If you look at the percentage who go to college, that's also gone up. Is it where it should be? No. You have a lot of broken families for lots of reasons, primarily because of economic, and that leads to problems. We're going to have an investigation now. We'll find out exactly what motivated Officer Wilson, and it'll be open. People will know exactly. And if he is indicted, he will go on trial and we'll be able to get these issues out so we can learn from them, just as we did if you go back and you look at the problems we had in the 60s after the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act was passed.
Well, Opio Sikoni, let me say this. Go ahead.
Let me say this. I heard that yesterday or the day before yesterday, there was a white man pointing a gun at police officers, did not get killed. We see this type of thing all the time. What motivates an unarmed man to get killed by the police who's black and an armed man who's white not get killed by the police is the constant diet of racism that we are fed in this country. It is negative media images against black males. And then you have news outlets, you have movies, you have radio stations that pump a whole bunch of garbage and filth, particularly where it's directed at black people. And so you have an officer who doesn't live in the community, probably doesn't know a whole bunch of black people, doesn't have the real and regular connections that's needed in a community-oriented way. He sees a black male, and it's like a stepchild situation. Anybody who's ever been in a step situation know that a stepchild and a person's regular child can do the exact same things, but you're going to feel totally different and more angered by what the stepchild does. And so black people in this country are treated like stepchildren. This is why you can get a man that's shot 6 times who's unarmed, and a person who's armed, who's white, doesn't get killed at all.
And Lawrence Corp, I don't know if you're updated with the news that came out last night. There was another African-American that was killed. The police had to kill him. I guess the count was that he had a knife in his hand, and he came at the officers who shot him, and he said, "Kill me now." And this was said to be an apparent convenience store robbery. Now, the first question comes into mind. I don't have exact details except what I have just stated to you, but do you think that there's a problem where police are not using enough precautions when it comes to the life of another person, that there may be somewhat trigger happy? I know that even though this particular person lunged at them, but could they avoid death, in other words? And of course, I'm trying to relate that to what happened to Chris Brown and his death.
Well, I think, as my colleague here said, there's still a lot of stereotyping. I mean, one of the problems you have in Ferguson, only 3 of the policemen are African-American, even though the population of Ferguson is, 60 to 70% African-American. We have to be very careful about people we take into the police department. We have to ensure that they're trained adequately. I hope we will learn from this to do it better. And we should have an investigation into this other killing as well to find out exactly what happened, why the officers, did this, and so we can learn from it and move on. We don't know, but I am confident that after the grand jury meets with Officer Wilson, and if he is indicted, that there'll be a trial, and all of the things that my colleague here is talking about can get out, and we'll learn from it and move on.
It's interesting that you talk about how the police should learn from that in particular. Opio Sikoni, back to this African-American who was killed by the police officer. The captain, he has come out and he told reporters that based on what he had heard, quote, "it seems reasonable to say that it was justifiable." And here you have a police captain in that charged, racially charged atmosphere to have obviously been part of this killing of this unarmed black teenager, coming out before even a formal investigation coming out and saying, I think it was justifiable. Isn't that where the problem is right there in some sense?
You put your finger right on it. Also, this is it's a pattern, and some of us look at it as a sort of a conspiracy. When a black person commits a crime, that person gets justice right away. It's real swift. That person goes to jail, you get processed in. And so when a police officer kills somebody and we look at this as so blatantly wrong, then now we have to begin talking about less weight and let's do all these other things that they don't do when it comes to blacks committing crimes. But also, what they do is they begin to demonize the victim. The body is not even in the ground. The parents are grieving. And anytime, if you look at this pattern across the country, anytime a black man is killed, they begin putting things out. They'll go back 10 years if they have to. Well, this person smoked marijuana. This person kicked a dog back 3 years ago. This person had a knife. And with Michael Brown, they're saying that, well, this person was a part of some robbery, even though he didn't have a weapon. He was a part of this robbery that was in the store, even though it had absolutely nothing to do with him being shot and killed unarmed on that fateful day. And we see the media, because they work heavily with the police department, they're going to take what the police department say and they're going to spread it out. And it becomes a negative PR against that African-American victim who's laid on the ground, bloodied and dead. And so that further exacerbates the problems and anger and hurt in the community, and it creates a bigger wall where police and community are concerned. And there are police officers out there that really don't like this, and they can't say much about it. And this is why organizations like mine are so important. Civil rights organizations, we have to stand up. And when we talk against bad police officers and bad policing, it makes it a better situation for good police officers. Police officers, they have what's called the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. The same rights are often not extended to African Americans, where they shoot somebody, they get a lawyer right away, they have a union that helps them out. They get all these different benefits from the criminal justice system that African Americans don't receive. And this is why you see African Americans in jail in large numbers, because when police officers go in majority black neighborhoods, they feel totally different about black people than they do when they go into white, particularly well-to-do neighborhoods.
And yet, on the other extreme here, Lawrence Gore, based on the stats from yesterday, guns have been seized and urine was thrown. Tuesday's protests have brought about that. Basically, the protesters also throwing glass and plastic bottles of water at the police. Now, minus the urine here, there's got to be a big concern. I would think alarm bells should be going off, given the how this is still so fresh, how the sentiments is so fresh in a state where it's mostly predominantly African American. Do you think that there's a worry now for U.S. officials across the country for perhaps other unrests to perhaps occur, and therefore they need to deal with this rather immediately instead of just trying to put out the fire?
Well, I think that if there's any good to come out of this, and it's horrible that, you know, that Michael Brown was killed, it will get us to ask the questions that my colleague is doing. You know, why are the police officers not reflecting the community? How are they trained to respond? Do they recognize that you can't respond differently to a person, you know, if they're because of their color or their accent or something like that? And again, I mean, one of the things that Attorney General Holder is doing is reviewing all of the sentences and asking the questions that were asked. Why are African American men getting longer sentences for the, you know, for the same crimes? We need to take a look at all of those things. Hopefully, something good will come out of this, and Michael Brown will not have died in vain. And I think the other thing is, in the United States, because we are a federal system and we do devolve powers down, you could have a local police force like you do in Ferguson. From what I've seen, and based on the statements you read from the captain and releasing that video, I don't know how this person ever got the particular job.
Well, let's see here. Opiel Sokoni.
Right. Well,
go ahead. If you have a reaction, go ahead.
Yeah, and let me say one of the reactions is you had right after this murder happened where Officer Wilson killed Michael Brown, they brought out German Shepherds. And anybody that saw that images flash across the screen where you have police officers with German Shepherds barking at people who are rightly upset that this boy, teenager, laid on the street on his face, bloodied and shot in the head a couple times in this community. And you can look back into the 1960s and you've seen Bull Connor them do the exact same thing, bring out German Shepherds. We could look at old slave movies and we saw how bloodhounds were used to hunt down African Americans. And so we see how history has no discontinuation. What happens yesterday directly affects us today. And so we saw some very awful images right after this boy was killed, his body laid on the ground for hours. And also you saw one of the police officers from Ferguson Police Department called some of the people that were angry animals. He probably didn't know that he was being hurt, but you can look it up on YouTube. He said, bring it on, you animals. And so this is the type of people that they have on the police department. And some of the reasons where you have a Ferguson that's majority white, where whites are in power, and a majority black population, is an apartheid system. You have the criminal justice system throughout the country. I remember a book called Black Robes, White Justice, and this is what you have. You have an apartheid system here. And so if we are to be honest with ourselves, we have to realize that blacks are treated differently, but blacks don't want anything more than to live their lives peacefully and to get along and ultimately take care of their families. And we want the poverty to be driven out of our communities. And so when it comes to other communities, when gentrification comes, they find all kind of money to put in every single community. But where that black community is there, majority black, somehow they can never find any money to bring that community up. And we know the biggest correlation to poverty and crime is crime and violence is poverty. More policing, it only creates problems.
Very well. I wish we'd more time to actually talk about your bio a little bit there. We're unfortunately out of time. Let me thank our guests. We had, in the beginning of the program, Kelly Maupin, our correspondent, who talked to us and just listened to President of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Opio Sacconi from Jacksonville, Florida, and Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, Lawrence Korb, who spoke to us from Washington. Thanks for tuning in. From Mikhail Vitaly and the entire team at the Capitol Tehran, it's goodbye.